Morgan is in the middle of eating her dinner, and I said, "Well, had your chance." She's been challenging today.
Oh, she's been being a bit Morgan, is she?
Yes, we're a bit organised, so she can possibly clock at some point, but I would hold off. I've got stuff ready so that if she does turn up, she does turn up, and if she doesn't turn up, she doesn't turn up, and that seems like a good logical test for whether or not she turns up or not.
And as the music fades, we are back once more. Hello, good evening, good morning, good welcome one and all, and welcome back to the Unsalted Popcorn Podcast, Doctor Who Directionless Commentary Special Edition, Limited Edition. You'll find us in the extras. Don't forget to buy the Blu-ray and the comic. And we are... and I believe now we're also getting three novels and an annual. It's going to be amazing.
Time Lord Victorious podcast.
Well, if we're going to do the Time Lord Victorious podcast, we have to do it properly, where each one of us hosts a different one, and we actually release them at the same time, covering different things which mean nothing. Which reminds me, I need to plug that in. As we were busy taking the piss out of the thing we love, because, hey, isn't that what you do with a relationship you've been in for 40-odd years? allow me to introduce our co-presenters for the evening. On the one hand, we have a Morganless John.
Hello.
And on the other hand, we have an equally Morganless, but that's not that unusual, Laura.
Hi.
And we may or may not be joined by Morgan, but that got explained before we played the intro music, because that's the only bit I'm keeping in. There is another bit I have to keep out. and if our lovely friend Peter Fox is listening, hello. So, how we all been? For those of you who don't know, Laura was a little busy yesterday, spending 12 and a half hours playing endless computer games. And it was fascinating from a spectator point of view, although I still can't work out why a game called Ooze didn't have ooze in it and why there were dildos in space. But, you know.
It's just a shame it wasn't actually called Dildos in Space. I mean, had they been more accurate with the game titles yesterday, I may have enjoyed them a lot more. But then it would have just been 52 games called Utter Shit, so...
Well, yeah, there was an element of that. Because, you know, I said this to you on Messenger, and I don't know if it quite came across quite what I meant. But, you know, I said they basically all looked like cheap rip-offs of Mario.
Yeah.
It's because they were all basically, just little tiny...
I agree that the one where you are a baby's dummy going through space and shooting at safety pins and dolls and teddy bears and rattles. Yeah, total Mario vibes from it.
All right, so the other ones, where you basically are one small bad set of pixels going along, jumping on blocks and jumping over gaps.
In the case of one game, when you're this big, hairy man with massive feet, and if you get hit, he becomes naked.
Yeah, that was a weird one, wasn't it?
That was a thing that happened.
Yeah, who was in the meeting? And they went, what we want is something a bit different that no one's done before. Oh, I've got something. No, you haven't, Dave. You haven't. No, I have. No, we talked about this at the pub, Dave. You haven't got this. No, I have, really. What we do, we get this guy with really big, hairy feet. And when he gets hit, all his clothes fall off. You used to like Kenny Everett, didn't you, Dave? Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying they had, you know, a lot of drugs were in use in the gaming industry, but... But anyway, how'd it go? How did you enjoy it?
I really enjoyed it. I mean... I invited someone on who ended up being horrendously drunk, so that section didn't really work for 2 hours, but that's okay. I'm not going to hold it against him.
Had he been on one of his "this is a nice local pub you can come to" tours before playing?
Yes, he had. five, maybe six drinks later, came on to play games horrendously, and in the end, he just talked about Underworld and Prodigy for about an hour.
That's
how it ended up. Unfortunately, I have very little knowledge of the work of Underworld and the Prodigy. So, he was basically just talking to his own chat while I was in mine, and nobody in my chat could hear him because I had an issue getting his feed. Basically, I'm deleting that section from the VOD, so that's not going to be on there. Because it was just shit streaming. But the other 10 hours was great.
Laura, I didn't realise that you held it against people if they just like came up onto video chats and got very drunk and talked nonsense for 2 hours. If I had known that, then potentially...
This is the thing. I was sober last night. That's the difference.
Jealousy.
Last 2 hours of that, you sure you're going to claim that you were sober?
Yeah, no, I was totally sober all the way through that. I would have fallen asleep at 10:30 otherwise.
Oh, wow. That was quite impressive.
No, all the way through that, not a drop. So
I'm just trying to get my head around the concept of an hour spent talking about Underworld. I mean, that's what? And all of their hit.
I mean, he doesn't listen to this, so I can quite honestly say that I wasn't really listening. So, I mean, it could have tangents. Going off on the tangents, so...
I love the fact that the chat about Underworld to actual output of Underworld ratio is a pig.
Well, yeah, this is it. I mean, it's, to my knowledge, and I appreciate his knowledge is better than mine, but I'm only aware of there being one song.
Yeah, but with about 15 different remixes, it's effectively 2 albums, so...
Oh my god, they've turned into a prog outfit. and so while I was watching Enola Holmes this afternoon, which I do recommend by the way, I believe Mr. Carruthers was doing one of those gig things we used to have.
I did a gig to the United States of America at 4 p.m.
Whole of the United States of America?
All of it. That's a political broadcast.
It was a gig that was being streamed out predominantly to the US, and I did it at 4 p.m. and I actually had to query the time because that meant that for some parts of the US it was 8 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, the perfect time for tuning in for an online gig.
Yeah. I mean,
I also saw it was all Scottish comedy as well. So is there a big Scottish comedy over there which there's just this market which you just happen to be part of them tapping into?
Apparently last Sunday they did a Welsh gig. So there's somebody in America that's just kind of going country by country and just saying, let's find out what Zimbabwean comedy is like. That's next week. And I'll be tuning in for that, to be fair. That sounds awesome.
That really does, doesn't it? So did it go all right? Did you actually have an audience across the whole of America?
We did have an audience. I thought it went okay. Some people tuned in on Zoom and some people tuned in on Facebook Live. I enjoyed it. And I'm at that kind of arrogant stage now where if I enjoy a gig and none of the audience do it, I still think it's a win.
Do you know what? I've been at that stage for some time. If I walk off stage thinking I enjoyed that, I'm good. I'm done. I don't really care about the other person.
I'm absolutely the same.
It makes me a bad comedian. It makes me bad in bed, but I don't care. I had fun.
I did my 5 minutes and I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Which in the case of the latter thing, that's twice. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's better to underrun than overrun.
Depends how much you weren't underrun by. I like I'm going to be careful what I say from here on in because I'm becoming aware of the fact that someone has got this on subtitles and is screenshotting the master things.
I keep seeing pop up on my screen. Laura sent a photo.
This is it. I keep getting little notifications at the corner of my eye and I think, oh god, what have I said now?
I'm hoping that everything I'm saying actually comes off like kind of semi-racist lyrics to Scottish talk. There's a moose loose about this house, or Donald wears your trousers every day.
Oh, on that note...
Hang on. I am hoping that everything I'm saying actually comes off like I can say racist lyrics to Scotty Dogs. I'll send you that one.
Oh, this is a gift.
I know what I'm doing during this episode.
Well,
we haven't had a good episode going on about subtitles in a while. So
that's very true. That's very true. I mean, it might be nice if occasionally we talk about the episode, but we tried it once. We didn't get on with it, so let's not break the habit of my lifetime. On the subject of Donald Wears Your Trousers,
yes,
I got tipped off to record a couple of Top of the Pops episodes from BBC Four from Friday night. And the first 2 weeks of 1990, do you know what was riding high in the Top of the Pop charts in this fine country of ours?
Was it 1990? Was that the one when we still had Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter?
That was later on in the year. At the start of 1990, the first 2 weeks of 1990, Donald Wears Your Trousers was a top 20 smash.
No. You can't have a top 20 smash. Anything in the top 20 is not a smash. Anything in the top 20 is a pity record. Either top 20 is reserved for big bands who are releasing like the fourth song from an album. So like people are less inclined to go and buy the single because they've already gone and bought the album. Or for shit. So Don't Wear Your Trousers, shit.
Well, you say that, you see, but New Kids on the Block smashed in at number 13. I watched them in the wrong order, so effectively it was time travel.
Is that Hang Tough?
Hang Tough didn't go in at number one. It came when it went in at number 13 or something.
However, they were a new band.
That was their second single.
They were a new band.
They had two songs in the top 20 in that first week of 1990.
But they were a new band, and okay, right. Who sang Donald Wears Your Trousers that version?
It was a collaboration between Underworld and The Prodigy.
I knew it.
Oh, all right, okay. Do you want to do the research while we start watching the episode? We'll answer that question as we go along, as who sang Donald Wears Your Trousers in 1990? I think it was Angry Anderson. I can't remember. I think it was the original version that was re-released for some reason.
Angry Anderson.
Angry Anderson did Suddenly, and that was the tune that Kylie and Jason got married to.
That's the one.
Anderson.
Yeah, it was Andy Stewart.
Stewart Anderson, but there's a story behind that. Stewart Anderson did a cover of it, but it was originally Andy Stewart. The whole joke was the fact that Stewart Anderson was Andy Stewart kind of flipped round. So there you go.
Clever. Who says the Scots haven't got a brain, eh?
I actually sang the song on stage at Salisbury City Hall in early 1996. I won't give you the context for that, but that's a true story.
Well, I've got a similar story in that once at a karaoke, me and a group of friends decided to do 500 Miles by the Proclaimers. We got up on stage, discovered that there's another song called 500 Miles, and they started to play, and we didn't give a shit and continued. So they had this other tune going, and we're going, when I wake up, well, I know where I'm going to be. It was fantastic.
I once had to attend a wedding in Scotland for my late cousin, who I can't stand. I can say that because none of my family listened to this, and she's dead, so... And I realised she was one of those people who, she'd gone from being a rock goth fan to suddenly being basically Scottish because she was marrying a guy from Scotland and she just completely assimilated herself to the culture. She wore tartan, she as good as called herself Muck Johnson. and at the wedding reception, obviously they had their song and all the other songs. Towards the end of the night, that's when you realise that 500 Miles is effectively a national anthem in Scotland.
Oh, gosh, yes.
I hadn't seen the light, and they suddenly stuck that on, and the dance floor was heaving. And it was like, it was one of those kind of slightly awkward, no one really knew anyone wedding receptions, where a few people danced to various songs. There was never a full dance floor. Stick that bastard on, everyone was suddenly rammed on the floor.
So it's the Scottish equivalent of...
the Birdie song.
What's the song called? Literally just in my head. Hi Ho Silver Lining.
Yes. It's exactly that.
It's the equivalent.
Or the Birdie song.
Not so popular nowadays, I find.
It's weird, isn't it? It's
weird that the Birdie song is suddenly not as popular as it used to be. I mean, if only there were a reason for that.
I'm missing something here. What's wrong with the Birdie song?
I'm really disappointed that your little sing song there didn't come up on subtitles.
Still not. It looked like Morse code.
Yes.
oh, there it is.
Right. Is Morgan joining us over there in the Morgan's back. Right. In that case, let's press play and then we'll go back to trying to work out why the Birdie song is racist.
I should also point out before we do go on that Morse code translated as horse code, which...
I've always suspected they were onto us.
I'm really concerned that my American audience didn't understand a fucking word.
Oh, please, your English audience doesn't understand a fucking word you say. Right, very quickly, let's just go back on track as quickly as we can. Tonight we are watching Flesh and Stone. Surrounded by an army of weeping angels, the Doctor must escape through the forest vault. We will, while watching this, explain why we are now in the presence of a legend from Digital Spy Forums. We'll come to him in a second, after we've done the Birdie song, because I really want to know what's the problem with that. But I feel we ought to at least try and start watching the episode. So, as we subtitle ourselves into an early grave and probably legal wranglings, we are going to start. Are you guys ready in your corners?
Yeah.
Marvellous stuff. In that case, dear listener, as tradition dictates, when we press play, you press play, and we will amble our way through Flesh and Stone in 3, 2, 1, and play.
Oh,
we get a previously. Oh, I imagine our friend off Digital Spy Forums really hated that bit.
It's really weird the way he says river there. I've got some friends that refuse to refer to me as John. They call me John Carruthers, just one name. You know, it's just like, I'm not John, I'm John Carruthers. And yep. I always associate River Song with that.
Yeah.
Same kind of, and you know, you never just kind of go, oh, River. You know, it's always kind of...
It always feels weird, doesn't it?
Without a surname.
Yeah, because the Doctor does it occasionally and he calls her River and it's like, no, River Song. You've got to give the whole thing. Why? Whose volume is up high enough that we can hear the actual episode?
Is it Laura's?
I'm guessing it was Laura's.
Was it you, Laura?
No.
It was bleeding in. Right, I'm doing the opening credits. Okay, very quickly, what's wrong with the Birdie song?
What's right with the Birdie song?
Well, nothing. It's terrible, but they used... 10 years after it had been in the charts, they were still playing it at weddings in Harwich in Essex, but they thought it was modern back then.
Well, you were going to the wrong weddings then. That's a you problem, not a society problem.
Well, it was the immediate society, and frankly, all weddings are wrong. So there's no actual problem with it other than it's just shit.
Yeah, that's basically it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Which I think is fully understandable, and everybody is aware of this now, so...
Oh, yes, totally. On the subject of shit 80s pop songs, what was the name of that other song where someone you yell Superman and you dance, you ran across the floor with your arm outstretched?
I think you're making shit up.
Go now. Skiing. We think it was a Black Lace song, but we can't remember what it was called.
Superman.
That's the one. That one. That song there.
I can do that song. I'm learning.
Comb your hair.
That's it. That one. Lots of really inane crap. Oh, hello, angels on the wall. There we go. Don't tell me we don't talk about the episode.
During what I think is quite a cool two-parter, the best part of a two-parter, and we're now talking about the hits of Black Lace.
True.
Okay, well, he's now fallen in a tube. There we go. Told you, we can talk about the episode. It's not a problem. So what do we think our friend on... Her hair looks wrong there. That didn't look like it was really her. What do we think our friend from the Digital Spy Forums was thinking of this at this point?
Oh, absolutely hated it. We're aware of this.
Excellent. What was his name again? I can't remember.
John T9.
John T9, that was it. He was a cheerful little bastard, wasn't he?
He was.
God, I'm not saying you have to be a fan of an artist's entire work. Okay? I'll hold my hand up and go, Aerosmith produced a couple of Duff albums. Metallica, not always perfect. In fact, the later period, shit. But
yeah, but you'd expect the Doctor to have produced some, because this is how you sound. You sound like it's the Doctor producing these episodes.
Well, yes.
It's slightly different.
It is slightly different. I don't disagree, but you know me, that's my immediate go-to reference point for modern culture is music. I'm not saying you're going to like, in a series that has run for 750 odd years, you're not going to like every episode. But to completely lose your shit when a new Doctor arrives to the point of refusing to watch it ever again, but then moan about the next episode, I just don't understand the mentality and the logic.
Well, he clearly stopped enjoying it during David Tennant's run. and then clearly hated Matt Smith too, and he's still complaining about it most of the way through season six. So I'm kind of going, this is another thing as well, because I see that a lot of this online. You see people going, oh, I don't like this. And I'm going, well, just stop. What if I didn't like something, I'd stop watching it.
Yeah, this is it.
And then, would you really?
Well,
would you just stop?
Well, John's a bad example there because John can't stop watch anything.
I wouldn't go into forums and talk about how much I hated it.
No.
Maybe that's the difference. I'd probably still watch it and kind of go, this isn't as good as it used to be. But I wouldn't be rushing on, the blood spitting out of my eyes as I angrily write the fact that it's not been good since Tom Baker was in it.
That's a very good point. I started watching, I don't know if you've seen it, I think it's called Love Life on BBC One, starring Anna Kendrick. And I really like Anna Kendrick. And I watched the first episode and it was kind of meh. I started the second episode and I realised I didn't really care and it was all disjointed and I could understand what they were trying to do, but I wasn't enjoying it. And I thought, life's too short.
Yeah.
I've decided to skip the bit where you go on an internet forum and tell the world how much you hated it. But I just went, I'll stop. And I just don't understand why. I mean, even like long-running series, Bones. I think I've got one series left to go on Bones. Oh, I love this bit.
I like Bones. It's just I can't remember which of the additionals it is. Full name is
Emily.
Emily. Yeah. Who is terrible in comparison to Zoe.
Yeah.
Literally no emotion throughout every series of Bones, which I know is kind of her thing.
Yeah, but it's also kind of the character, and she's perfect for it.
I know, but it should be no excuse if you're going to be playing a character who is naturally wooden to just get a naturally wooden actress into your play.
The thing, a really good actor can convey that whilst being really good. It can be...
Look, if Henry Cavill can make an entire career out of being shit, I think we can give Emily one character in a series, because that's all she's basically ever done. But I mean, my point being that I got up until I think the penultimate series and I just lost the will to live and I've never gone back to it.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, life's too short.
The Mentalist, but I've gone back to the last couple of series of that now and I really like it.
Like The Mentalist?
I never got into that.
I really, really like The Mentalist. I just wish they hadn't ended the main story arc of the entire thing before it ended.
And then
what the hell
happened to the rest of it? I didn't get into that. I think we talked about Prodigal Son before and have given up on that.
I didn't watch any of Prodigal Son.
No, it starts off really well, but it goes downhill very rapidly.
I haven't watched a single episode of Prodigal Son, so I actually think that I owe it to myself to go on to as many internet forums as I can.
I kind of like the claustrophobia of this bit. The fact that
it is, but Moffat did Base Under Siege episodes very well.
Yes.
So it's kind of.
But they are also.
It's been in the episode with everything that's going on with Amy as well.
Yeah, but they're also kind of very, very Doctor Who episodes, aren't they? Get everyone together in one room.
Doctor Who episodes of Doctor Who, which is always a good thing, I find.
Yeah.
Well, it does help, totally. But you know what I mean? They are. It's very much a Doctor Who trope. They stick them all together in a room and go panic.
I'm just thinking that when you look back at the Stephen Moffat stuff that he was doing during the kind of Russell T. Davis era, the two-parter with the gas mask kids.
It's like the Cabbage Patch Kids, the gas mask kids.
Yeah, they never took off quite as much, did they?
A base under siege undertones, you know, when they're trapped by door and blah, blah, blah. And then the Girl in the Fireplace, very much the same.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Blink also has this kind of, you know, this.
Yeah.
And then you've got, so it's almost like up until this point, it's always bloody done.
you should go on an internet forum and moan about that.
But that's no bad thing, because there is that kind of claustrophobia and oppression. And, you know, even when there's a wider canvas, even when you look at the 11th hour, he can basically run about this entire village and the whole planet, but everything is just, you know, there's this countdown to it, and it's, and we won't talk about the Beast Below.
I mean, are we also not repeating ourselves a little bit in the, oh, look, we're on a kind of spaceshipy, electronic-y type thing, and there's a fake forest? Have we not done the whole fake forest thing before? on Waters of Mars, amongst other things.
I suppose.
Yeah, I know, but it's not exactly a. I mean, there was a purpose for it.
No, I've decided I'm on board with John Deny now. If they can't come up with completely, completely original, non-sexual stories, I'm not interested. I don't care anymore. I want entirely original stories. No more jelly babies, no scars, no regenerations, because I've done that before. and I don't want Amy possibly looking attractive, because that's just wrong and bad for everyone. It's no, awful. Stop
looking
it
at some of John Deny's other comments on other threads, I don't think that would have been something that he would have said.
There are certain things about this new Doctor he liked then?
No. I'll send them to you later. I screenshot more than I sent you earlier.
Oh, you can't just dangle that carrot.
I can dangle any kind of carrot I want, and that's exactly what
Tom did. Laura's just opened up exciting possibilities here. We could obviously have this kind of going out, but we could create a kind of Patreon account where you get to see the uncut shit that Laura would do. For a premium price, you could go out to the Patreon account and see Laura's uncut screenshots.
Do you know what? I think our Facebook Messenger chat would basically be the Patreon account, wouldn't it? Yeah, totally. Okay, plot point, crack of the wall.
Well, that's a wonderful thing as well. I don't know, you know, because we were obviously talking about plot arts. You had Bad Wolf, Torchwood, Mr. Saxon, the planets disappearing. And he decided to dub season 5 as Amy's Crack.
Amy's Crack.
Mark just said Amy's a crackhead, which is
Well, at least you didn't get the original joke, that's all right.
Yeah, I'm torn between relieved and concerned.
Go with relieved, it's safer. I've forgotten how jumpy this got, which is now currently really doing my eyes in. And also how mildly tense.
Like someone's going to come behind me and tap me.
Oh, can you stop it?
I want to know why exactly I know we just saw an angel move there, and it's all very weird seeing an angel move, but I want to know why they're in these certain positions in the first place. Like, what? Like they're creeping up whilst nobody's looking, and then all of a sudden they go...
Look, we've all played statues in the playground. You know the rule.
Yeah, I used to try and get myself in the most uncomfortable position possible and then not move. And it was that kind of masochistic suit. Right? If you're playing musical statues and there was a point where you saw them heading towards pressing pause on the music, you go, and you would just be this most bizarre angle that you couldn't possibly hold for much longer than 30 seconds.
I mean,
and it just.
I'm guessing they were able to move and grab his jacket because he had his back to one of them.
Yep.
Yes, that makes sense. But that's exactly what happened.
But
issues
with Amy kneeling down in front of River aside. How did they grab the jacket, which is a very tight fit on him, not loose and baggy, without just grabbing hold of his head? Because that's not a loose, flowing jacket or the old long coat thing that Tennant and Captain Jack used to run around in. It's quite a tight-fitting suit jacket, so grabbing the back of that is...
He's a bit windy and it can just get out of these things.
Yeah, but I'm not sure how you grab it with your stony hand in the first place.
What do you want to say about the Weeping Angels, Morgan?
The library I go to after school sometimes, there's an angel in the roof, and I always remember in the rest.
I mean,
it's dark, it's especially scary.
If Morgan doesn't turn up one day, at least we know what happened.
What's freaky about is the fact that it's at a library as well, which is an R. Stephen Moffat callback.
Yes, it is, totally. Although I'm quite impressed that you've still got libraries in Scotland.
We do, but I mean, it's just pop-up books and stuff.
Just colouring books for the children.
comics and copies of right-wing newspapers.
Yeah, you're all fascists up there. We know this.
We are. I love it.
I'm not watching it at the same because...
I've forgotten actually how quite, because Amy's new, this is actually quite dramatic, because you don't know at this point that she's in it for the long haul.
No, so to kill her off after 5 episodes would be a, I mean, they could have, and then the rest of the series could have been done in reverse and bringing her back in the finale like they did with Rory. Yeah. All she has to do is go through the same crack.
Yeah.
So this present. It could have happened.
Yeah, totally. This is it. It's only sort of looking back on it now, you realise that because it's new...
She dies, but gets eaten by the crack, doesn't exist. Doctor goes back to Rory, takes him on an adventure.
Yeah.
Same thing happens to him. They both come back in the finale, so it could have happened.
It could have been done.
Spoilers, Rory dies.
No! Oh, don't tell me that.
I think I just announced that anyway, so...
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, never mind. I didn't like him anyway. Jonty Nine hated him, so it's only fair. I can't watch... I've realised now I can't watch Matt Smith and the Bowtie seriously after that thing on Facebook the other day about that little kid who got the glitter trainers and he was wearing a bow tie and he just looked so happy and so cute. I now want Matt Smith
and
to have...
You can't take Matt Smith seriously as a doctor because of the bow tie. What are you, some kind of Jonty Nine?
It's called doing a Jonty Nine. I'm actually Jonty Eight. I got there first. did you not see that story on Facebook? Did you not see the thing I shared? Basically, it's that sort of identity and growing up to be who you possibly can be and support from parents and stuff. And this kid was supposed to be buying school shoes, but hated school shoes. And the mum realised that he actually really liked these glitter trainers that were in a different section. So she went, just sit there a minute, and she went and found them. They were in his size, brought them to him, and his little face lit up. And she took 2 pictures of him wearing these shoes, and you've never seen a kid look so delighted and so happy. And he happened to be wearing a bow tie as well. And I thought,
and now he knows all he's got to do is stamp his feet and he'll get what he wants for life. Yeah. Well,
the bit I found interesting was the mum was concerned that the trainers were possibly gendered a little bit, so he might get bullied. And I'm like, he goes to school in a bow tie. The footwear is the least of his problems. Yeah. But yeah, kids today, eh? Poof.
The bow tie, anything would be.
I've got glittery trainers and a bow tie.
I've just got booted out.
It does.
I was going to say, you suddenly disappeared. I know.
Why did you boot me out?
I didn't touch anything. And I'm just slightly concerned that you appeared to have changed slightly because there was something in your hand and now it's not there and it's just like... What's gone on? You are you a parallel?
Parallel Laura.
Is there a statue behind you? I don't know what happened. I didn't touch anything, honestly.
Oh, she's away again.
Hello, she's gone again.
How are you going, Peter?
Is it doing that thing where if you don't move for 30 seconds, it thinks you're not in the chat anymore, so it just boots you into the background?
Maybe.
And then I get a full screen of John, and no one needs that. Hello, Morgan.
Hi, Morgan.
My dad's away to find Laura, because he said, I'm going to go away.
Do we just point out this bit here? Because this is the bit that got everybody talking.
What?
The doctor's there. The doctor came back for her. That's nice. But when the doctor left a second ago... He wasn't wearing his jacket, but now he's wearing his jacket. Continuity error. Literally everybody in the forums.
He does appear to be wearing a jacket, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Which is odd, because he left that behind in the hands of a statue.
Yeah, just a second ago.
Yeah.
He ran away, and now he has a jacket on. Ooh, continuity.
That's bad. Why did no one stop and think, how did he get his jacket back?
It's terrible, isn't it?
Imagine Jonty was really upset about that.
The angels put him forward in time instead of back in time.
Ah, clever. That'll do it. And the jacket's gone again.
And the jacket's gone again. I know. Terrible, isn't it?
Is there some dramatic reason I'm missing? Is this...
Yeah, kind of, but...
What am I missing?
I'm loving your innocence.
I'm not really paying attention. What am I missing? What's happened? Oh, I'm up to speed. Yep, I got it now, I think. Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything and I might be wrong, but I think I'm up to speed.
Okay.
He wasn't really there.
No, was
there? Maybe, yeah.
Well, he was, but not in the same thing.
Or is it different?
Moffat liked his dates in these first two series as well, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Totally.
Because series six is based around the date of the Doctor's death. This is based around the date of Amy's wedding.
Yep. He does like a date or two. Where has the Carruthers gone?
He's right there. Just mention his name.
This is amazing, isn't it? Say his name three times and he appears.
John, you missed the massive continuity error when the Doctor disappears wearing just the shirt and comes back in the jacket, and then the next thing he's not in the jacket anymore.
Moffat must go.
I know.
But what amazed me was the fact that I think it was Gallifrey Base at this point, but the predecessor to that was Gallifrey One. That was the forum that I was on constantly, and the amount of people that instantly twinked saying this is going to come back in the finale or whatever, I think this is a future version of Doctor, and you're like, what? How? It was just one of these things going, how could you, it was a continuity, you know, how could anybody, and that was what Stephen Moffat wanted. He wanted people to either go, can't believe this is a continuity, he didn't expect people to nail it.
Well, it must have been, I mean, I don't think I'd noticed that first time round, and watching it this time round and not thinking clearly, I did think it was a massive continuity thing, but clearly it was too obvious a thing to have ballsed up, so yeah.
To be fair, most things do get got. I mean, in all fairness, the purpose of the crack does change between season 5 and season 7. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anyone in season 5 picked up exactly what the crack was going to be.
No, probably not.
Not what it was going to be in its final form, anyway.
No, I don't see how you could have done at that point. There was hardly any clues. It was other than a crack in time, which could be anything. There was no other hint or suggestion it could be anything else.
Right, okay, well.
Why are his eyes closed? I do like as well, as a direct comparison to his predecessor, Matt Smith's confused face.
Yeah,
agreed.
He does do Puzzled and Confused very, very well, and it's very believable and refreshing.
I really thought he nailed it very quickly. I've said this loads of times before, I think.
Yeah, but you were wrong. Jonty Nine spoke for us all when he said it was terrible.
It's a fair point.
He is our president now.
It does seem that The Girl Who Waited was the point where he left, though, because there's nothing later than The Girl Who Waited. But there's 1.5 seasons worth of him still watching.
Yeah.
The Girl Who Waited's a good one because it was just like the boy that couldn't be fucked waiting.
You're assuming Jonty Nine's gender there?
Do you know what? I was, and I think it's because you referred to Jonty Nine as he before this, so I assumed on.
I think that's possibly, I might be guilty of also presuming the gender, but it's more based on the absolute bollocks they were talking.
Yeah, that's... The fact that every post started with "well, actually."
Yeah, exactly.
we're doing the drawing in the air bit.
Oh,
that.
Yeah,
his time can be a reason. Just in case.
I'd like the subtitles on that, please. This is quite a again, quite a tense, intense bit. They kind of went dark quite early for this series, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why have statues taken to strangling people rather than just grabbing them and transporting them off into 1920s Yorkshire or wherever they end up?
Was it explained? I can't remember.
Basically, Steve Moffat plot point. Just wanted him to do something different.
Doesn't work.
No. I don't think it works. It's the fact that they then proceed to never do this again.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously it didn't work.
And they're less terrifying if they just kill you.
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, I kind of, if you, the minute they touch you,
I don't know. If you go to something knowing that you are going to die if it catches you, I think it's more terrifying than being aware that yes, you're going to get to live a life. I suppose the most terrifying thing would be is if you get sent back to last week, because that means you've got a week to live. That would be quite terrifying.
Yeah.
Or you just rematerialise in exactly the same place.
Okay, right. Well, I'll redefine this. It's less terrifying if you were being sent back in time for the actual characters in the show. But there's something unsettling about the fate of them as a viewer. So it's kind of more terrifying watching the fact that they're being kind of almost kind of removed and their kind of potential energy for what they would have been had they continued to live life has been displaced and they've been thrown back in time and then kind of, you know, it's not unpleasant for them, but it's unpleasant as a viewer to watch the fact that their kind of potential energy.
I kind of get you. It's unpleasant watching. Effectively, you're watching a death scene, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's going to die or whatever, and the sonic screwdriver doesn't work on stone, which we all knew anyway. Shut up, Doctor. You should have known that.
Did they explain in Angels Take Manhattan why when Rory gets sent back, he's stuck in the Statue of Liberty, effectively, or wherever that building is? Because that's quite unsettling, and that's almost like Moffat trying to rewrite the Angels again. To say that when you get sent back in time, you're almost a prisoner?
Well, I don't know if it was explained or not, but it would be very Moffat to just basically just tweak the rules as he went along to suit the plot.
Yep.
Isn't that basically Doctor Who, though?
Yeah, pretty much.
He does choose the rules in that episode because does he not displace Rory? Do they not displace Rory twice that by the very nature of how they do it shouldn't have worked?
Yeah.
Well, isn't it them that displace Rory to end up being the tedious twat who just stood by Stonehenge in a Roman uniform for 3,000 years?
Yeah.
That's a statue displacement-y thing, isn't it?
No.
No? Are you sure?
Yeah, that's the crack.
This will all come back to me.
It's only four podcast episodes away as well, so.
Ooh, how exciting. Thing I find fascinating.
We can say that he dies because we're not doing that episode because it's a crap two-parter until the end.
Excellent. Well, in that case, he's dead, so we don't care. The thing I find really, really fascinating is we all watched this when it was broadcast, and yet somehow you've retained this information and it's all still new to me. This is brilliant.
I've got a friend, Jennifer, who Laura's met, and I think I mention her like every second podcast, and I kind of find she's great source material for this sort of shite. when watching something and there's a new season of something, say, oh, it's like season four of Stranger Things is coming out. She'll then say, I only watched that about 6 months ago, but she then has to go back and watch season one, two, and three on an update because she doesn't have a fucking clue what the show's about. She knows she liked it. and she'll go kind of going, there's something attracting me to the fact that new season of this show has aired. I must then go back and rewatch.
Is she going to listen to this?
No, she won't listen to it because she can't because she hasn't watched Doctor Who since Tom Baker was in it, and she'd have to catch up in about 40 seasons.
Oh. Well, we could take her through some of those.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But she would then need to just realistically, but it should be trapped.
See, that is one of the advantages of. Oh, John! I don't know. John's connection is really mucking about this evening. That is one of the advantages of the way my brain works is that I don't trouble myself with the fact I don't know what happened. I figure I just pick it up as I go along.
Yeah.
And as long as somebody kind of says, "Oh, blah blah blah," and you go, "Oh, that must be referencing a previous thing," you're on board.
Oh, you've got one very well.
Yeah, we're like, well, we watched the trailer for season two of Snowpiercer.
I've still not watched season one.
Ah, oh, do watch it. It's very good. We were watching the trailer for season two of that this afternoon, and as we were watching, we were going, "Oh yeah, that's because that bit," and "Oh right, that's that person," and "Oh yeah," and the pair of us were doing it, minute and a half thing, and we were basically piecing together the whole of the first season.
That's just wonderful. One of the good things about Netflix is when a new season comes on, they usually do this 5-minute recap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they'll go, and I always skip recap and then halfway through the episode regret it. Going,
well, I'm going to need to do that for when the second half of season 5 of Lucifer finally gets around to airing, because I've already forgotten what happened in the first half. We only finished watching that 2 days ago.
The issue I have with that, with the recaps where it shows particular things, and this happened with series 6 of Doctor Who, is when it does something like that. Sorry, I do like this scene. Is that they will do a recap of the bits that you need to remember in particular for the episode that you're about to watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Season 6 does that with the, what's it called? The Tesselector.
Yes.
Like the thing which sorts everything out at the end of the episode in the series as a whole, suddenly gets a recap at the beginning just to remind you.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough,
and you can't do it subtly. So whenever I see something now, and it's just like there's one innocuous moment from episode 2 of the series, and I'm now on episode 8, it's the last episode of the series, and they're suddenly referring back to something, which is like, you start to second guess what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't this basically like a really, really, really scary episode of Nightmare?
Yeah, basically.
No, go left. No, right, back a step.
Nightmare was a weird one because for the first few series, there were four of them, the Dungeoneer and the three people who were trying to guide them through the dungeon. And when the inevitable death of the Dungeoneer came, all four of them would appear at the end. They'd all wave goodbye to Tregard and then go off with their whatever they got, some kind of brochure to the world of Nightmare. I've got no idea. But then, like, after season four or so, after the Dungeoneer died in game, only the three of them got sent out. And I believe that at the age of 10 or 11, that they started killing off the Dungeoneer and they actually died inside the dungeon because all of a sudden they weren't going home anymore.
I think you'll probably find, actually, that was under Thatcher's Britain. They ended up having to go and work somewhere.
And that mate.
Yeah, not a coal mine, obviously, because you got rid of all those, but...
That's good.
It annoys me that you see the angels moving.
The thing is, the angels move so slowly when they're moving, but when you actually, if you were to blink and one appears from goes from one side of the room to next to you, they go a lot faster.
Yeah, it's weird, that, isn't it? It's
weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just always like the kind of meta thing about the fact that you never see the angels move because you're looking at them, even though you're watching, you know. I like that about the fact that you...
Well, I've not seen them move, but that's because I blink a lot. Maybe we just missed it.
See, they're right behind you now, but you're forever just turning around looking over your shoulder because you're paranoid.
But it's only in that one scene and you never see it again whenever the weeping angels reappear. I think Steve Martin, I should have done that.
Well, actually, you kind of
see it with the Statue of Liberty.
That angel looks very different to all the other angels as well. Obviously.
You kind of see the Statue of Liberty and also, obviously, on the back of that, Ghostbusters 2. So, you know, it does happen.
to recap on a previous point, they did this when Lucifer was on Amazon Prime, which I think was when it was with NBC.
Yeah.
Or Fox. Might have been on Fox. They did the recap thing at the start of every episode.
Yeah.
And they did exactly as Laura was saying. They brought back certain aspects and elements of the story that you needed to remember for that one episode. So you kind of could watch the recap and go, all right, they're going to do that this episode. You could bugger off and watch the next one. But Netflix seem to have learnt from this, and they don't do recaps.
Yeah.
They just
Netflix, they really do recaps for anything now.
No. It's great. I mean, like I said, they'll do a season recap before the new ones. On their trailers are honestly almost an episode in their own right. But they don't do that 2-minute recap at the start of the episode telling you all the things you need to remember for the story that's coming.
It's for an American audience, I think, and I feel really bad saying that, but the attention span of...
They have.
And I don't think that's even true anymore, but it used to be...
It used to be a common thing. It's like football matches were never popular over in the States because it was 45 minutes without breaks and they can stick adverts in and shit.
But they took them a long time to work out. You just put the adverts across the bottom of the screen. But that's why American football, as a game in and of itself, was perfectly built for television.
Yeah.
Because you get so many moments. This is a lovely callback to Sylvester McCoy, was it?
Are we still talking about football and adverts in the States?
No, I've gone off on a complete tangent. Colin Baker, okay, cool. Perry, the tide coming in, and the horrible pink sky, and the TARDIS, and the water coming out, and they had to film it very quickly. Well, I've forgotten the story it was in. But yeah, that's American football and basketball to an extent. It's custom built for that because you have all the timeouts for the drops. The
announcers can get away with saying this game is brought to you by, I don't know, Skittles or something. Yeah. Or in our case, Apple. This podcast is brought to you by Apple.
Yep.
go build... No. that kind of thing. And they can just do that. They can get their adverts out.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Sponsorship that way. So I think that's why there's a bigger market for it. But yeah, for a long time, there was this idea that... They have no attention span.
But then, I remember my uncle telling me about this because he'd been out in the States way before I even became aware that was a place you could go, because I thought Harwich was the end of the world. And you realise it when you know it watching programmes. Well, Harwich is literally the end of the world. You keep on going, hit the North Sea. And the end of civilization and a lot of racists. Hello to our Harwich listener. I'm assuming we have one. What was I saying? Yeah, the fact that they cut in and out of the show so quickly. Because, again, watching Lucifer, you suddenly get these shots randomly of night sky. And that's because they suddenly dumped out of it, chucked in an ad break, and rather than going straight back into the action, they've learnt that that was causing a problem with attention. So they put a filler 2-3 second clip of night sky over LA before the story picks up again, and that's how they come in and out of adverts. And it's just trying to watch an episode of something in America with their ad breaks, because they used to do that with 24.
Oh, God, yeah.
They did when they brought 24 over here, they did it as with American adverts, and it was a nightmare because you get 5-7 minutes in, and you're just getting to grips with the episode, and suddenly you bomb out, and someone tries to flog you a loo roll.
The annoying thing was, if you watched it on Sky... They obviously they hit their adverts and they weren't in sync with where the Americans had it. So you had like 4 minutes or 24 then do the dum dum dum, and it would show you the kind of clock going from like 12:06 to 12:09, and then it would have another 2 minutes, and then Sky would decide to have the ad break then.
Yeah,
and you're like,
I know, it was ludicrous.
Yeah.
But actually, on that note, I don't know if I talked about this on the last podcast. I just about managed to get through the Nightmare Fair, the first of the three Doctor Who books.
Oh, man.
5 chapters in before you actually get 3 pages of prose so you can get stuck in, instead of 5 paragraphs and a break and 3 paragraphs and a break. It's just like, I'm not a toddler. I've got a longer attention span. I had a longer attention span when I was 7 when I should have read the book first time round. Terence Dix was a much better writer.
You don't hear that often.
No. But my memory is his Doctor Who novelisations were very good. I found them really, really gripping as a kid. But then, you know, I was 10, didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I like this bit because I don't think she quite gets at this point how much danger she was in, and she thinks she's safe because she's with him, but he knows what he's lost in the past. I think there's an element of that to it.
And I think the weird thing is, and I know this was filmed before, the 11th Hour, but I think Amy Pond somehow looks younger.
Yes.
You know, and I know that there wasn't much in it, so we're not talking about, like, they filmed it and then it was a year
break. Oh, God, where's this bit? Sorry.
Yep.
It's this bit.
Oh, is this John? Is this the bit that the Daily Mail hated?
Yeah, that bit that I showed you earlier was the preview. I remember seeing their reaction. It was basically the same article, however, it was viewers expressing their disgust and shock. Obviously,
oh, of course, naturally. See, I don't remember feeling disgust and shock.
I remember finding it a little bit out of place.
Yeah, I don't dispute that. But that's
a writing thing. It's not a shocking, crude thing.
No, this is it. It was just that's not the relationship that ever exists in that context. But I kind of, I guess if you're aiming so it
this
for...
This is a 21-year-old kissogram.
Yeah, exactly.
Beforehand raging.
Yeah, and clearly...
The man that just saved her life.
Yeah, and clearly... Oh, hello. Is suddenly aware of the fact that she's only going to have... one thing to play with for the rest of her life, in theory. So you just want to check you're getting in the right car.
You say one thing, but doctors have two hearts.
Good point.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're about you're on the eve of buying your Peugeot, and it's that moment when you might actually quite fancy a Ford or a Renault. So you just want to take a quick test drive just to make sure you're happy with the Peugeot. I understand that mentality.
Never before has this analogy been made about this scene, I can guarantee that. Yeah. It is almost like Mother's trying to put a stop to the whole doctor is very, very human, have a relationship with Rose and Martha lusting over him, kind of thing. So let's just make the doctor more alien and say no.
Yes.
The thing is, at this point, you say it's out of place, but you actually look back and wonder why it's not happened before.
Well, it's kind of been alluded to with Tennant and Rose. Oh, hello, next time.
No, that's all that as Laura was saying, but I mean, this is quite explicit, and it's just kind of, not an attractive guy, dashes in, saves the world, blah, 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 constantly, I'm just thinking, sploosh.
Yeah, but I think you've got to bear in mind that in the early era, certainly, first two doctors definitely would not have come up. The first time it could have possibly come up was with Joe Grant, but he was very busy being flamboyant and flapping around the world. And clean,
dandy. And dandy.
Yes, he was very dandy, so that kind of took care of that problem. And Tom Baker, you just wouldn't.
Was kind of taken with another Time Lord, so...
Yes, yeah. There is that small matter. And then Peter Davison always had more than one of them around, so unless something really exciting was going to happen, it wasn't going to happen. And Ace clearly just did not bat for that team, so...
What?
Sorry, John, spoiler alert.
But I don't know if you... There's actually a point, and I don't know if I brought this up before, but if you watch some of the Peter Davison ones, and I don't know if this is documented, but you actually get the feeling, wasn't it, that Peter Davison was quite into Sarah Sutton, was it, that played Nyssa?
Yes, I think there was a definite...
Yeah, there's a couple of points where you're just watching them, kind of watching her, and you're going...
Yeah, but to be fair, I mean, Nyssa was absolutely beautiful, but Adrig... I mean, nothing is a cold bucket of water. Yeah, nothing is like a cold bucket of water or a cold shower like Adric.
You think that possibly the Fifth Doctor engineered for Earthshock?
He got so frustrated and fed up. He was like, sod it, Adric, you fly this thing. But that looks a bit dangerous. Shut up, sit there, don't move. Doctor, I'm going to die. Hey-ho!
I'll be back.
Yeah. We'll save you. Don't worry about it. It's all good. Yeah. Anyway, where were we?
Yeah.
Right, so
I'm just trying to think of some kind of correlation between making the Earth move and Earth shock. That's all I'm doing.
I'm just thinking, does he not ditch Tegan in the next story? He's just solely trying to get...
Yeah. He's basically getting rid of all the cock-blogging that's been going on for an entire season.
Do you remember... And it's happened a few times over the years when they do prospective people who could play the Doctor when such and such an actor moves on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen anymore, but between like 2006 and 2011, 12, whenever, like one name that constantly came up which would have been horrific was Russell fucking Brand.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
There is only one way that the character of that Doctor would work, and I think you just described it.
Yes, totally, totally.
This is literally just moving on. And just whoever was yesterday's just in the past over there, probably yep. with some kind of non-disclosure agreement, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Allegedly,
the Doctor lands on a planet, impregnates half the planet, leaves. The Daleks turn up, and he goes, "Oh, I've been there. I can't go back. It's a bit awkward now." he would have been absolutely awful. Awful. I'd rather have Alan Carr. I think Alan Carr would make a great Doctor.
It's like the ones that come up for James Bond though, isn't it? When, like 20 years ago again, when people were coming up with replacements for Pierce Brosnan and there were some stupid names in there, like Robbie Williams, like a non-actor.
Oh man, yeah, there was, wasn't there?
It wasn't Millennium, was it? Whichever song it was of his that he was dressed up as Bond?
Yeah, it was Millennium, I think.
It was Millennium.
Yeah.
And from that... Yes, Robbie Williams would make a brilliant new James Bond. No, he wouldn't.
No, not in a million. I'd rather have Gary Barlow.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine Gary Barlow being abroad in, let's say, a tax haven? any one of them being a spy over there. It'd be amazing.
It'd be fantastic. Bond, you have to come back to the London office. Well, I can come back for 48 hours max.
Why is that for another
36
days this year.
that'd be such a great plot though, wouldn't it? Bond, you have to solve this problem in 34 days or fewer. Otherwise,
or you owe the UK government £155 million in tax. Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
Totally, totally. I can come in, save the problem, write the Tories a love song, and then I better be off.
He's always get 8 passports.
Rather than OHMSS, it would be more OHRMC.
Yep, that'll be the one. I like the way you had to slowly spell out on Her Majesty's...
I did it on Her Majesty's Secret Service. I can do it.
I
edge up on Her Majesty's pleasure.
That'd be the Russell Brand version. Before we go back to talk about that episode quickly, I've always maintained that on Her Majesty's Secret Service is the worst Bond film.
Why?
I've held that view for a very long time, partly because I don't like George Lazenby as Bond, partly because there's no chemistry with Diana Rigg, and partly because I just don't get on with that particular film. I may have to watch it again, because I've discovered it's not the worst Bond film.
It's not the worst Bond film. No. There are three worse.
Never Say Never Again is the new worst Bond film.
But it's not a Bond film.
Well, it is. It's James Bond.
It's not a Bond film.
It's not a canon Bond film, but it is a Bond film in that he's playing James Bond and he had played James Bond.
In which case, the original Casino Royale is a Bond film when it's not.
Well, yeah, you could argue that.
In which case, Spy Hard with Leslie Nielsen is a Bond film. Because in fact, Russ Abbott as Basil and Bond.
And they are all better than Never Say Never Again.
I was going to say Spy Hard is a better film. And Never Say Never Again.
It is, yeah, totally. Because, I mean, it's kind of... I didn't realise, and I don't know if you knew this, but obviously there were legal problems around Thunderball, the book, and the rights and everything else, and there was all that problem with it. It's directed by your man who did Empire Strikes Back. So that's a blot on his copybook. The original scriptwriter came in, wanted to write an older Bond, a more psychological thriller thing, and they looked at it and went, fuck off with that, and threw it out the window. And they brought in Lefrenet and Clement to write the script and write the dialogue. So suddenly a Bond film is written by the same people who brought you Porridge.
Well, that's not like.
And it's just like, when there's scenes like, I need you to fill this sample cup. What, from here? And you think, oh, dear God,
does anybody else have the image of Fletcher walking to the centre of the screen in this weird kind of black outline circle? With the Porridge theme tune playing, obviously.
Yeah.
The Bond theme tune. That'd be the Porridge theme tune, because obviously Never Say Never Again couldn't have the Bond theme.
No. Oh, God, yeah, could you imagine? Just when you realise that Harry, what's his name, from the guy who runs Slade Prison, actually works as the boss of Spectre.
Inspector!
Hey! Oh, I like this. This is really good.
Oh, there'd be a link there and everything.
Oh, superb. Anyway, right, so yes, Doctor Who, we watched an episode once. I think as a two-parter that held up as two separate episodes, because that's how we watched it in the end. But that second half, it definitely built to a really, really good, exciting ending until it got awkwardly sexual, I think.
No, I agree. And I think a lot of that is because, as you mentioned earlier, we didn't know what the situation was, where it was with Karen Gillan, whether she was just a short term, whether she was going to disappear for a bit and come back or whatever, which, as we discussed, there was scope there for it to happen, in hindsight at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not knowing that and still having a very fresh doctor, a very fresh young doctor, and the energy pouring out during that episode, it did make for a very, very good episode. Well done, Mr. Moffat, again.
Yeah, totally. I mean, obviously the jacket ruined it.
Well, we'll hate you by the time we reach about April 2012, but, you know, before then. By the time we get to, like, the Power of Three, we'll be like, no.
I mean, I'm going to hate him now just to beat the curve, just to get in there ahead of Jonty.
Stephen Moffat, when he wrote two parters, he said that he always liked the first part of the beginning of the second part to almost not quite kind of gel with the end of the first. And it doesn't quite do it with this one, but this is the first one he actually see him kind of take that mentality on. Whereas, I don't know if you remember the way this episode ends with the Doctor kind of going, now, and then he says, you know, he tells him that they're going to have to jump, and he says you shouldn't put anything in a trap, blah, blah, blah. And then that's the end. And then when you watch the next bit, they've suddenly got, you don't even see them escape the issue. It just explains how they managed to escape it, because they did the jump thing and they've ended up on the kind of roof of the, you don't actually see it. So there's that kind of jarring bit.
Yeah.
And he actually, but it does what he said. That was his favourite way of doing two-parters. He does it better in the kind of Pandorica two-parter.
Yeah, I like the fact that that got translated as jaunty. Thank you. I'm concerned about the faces I'm pulling in these subs. Anyway, right. We'll save those for the OnlyFans special. Right, so that was Flesh and Stone, and we've decided, for reasons, we are doing The Vampires of Venice next, aren't we?
Yeah.
Is this, I can't remember, whose idea was this? I suspect I'm going to get shouted.
It wasn't mine for once, so that's always good.
Yeah, it was yours, wasn't it?
I don't think it was me.
Oh, shit. I think it was yours, because I never come up with anything. I think someone mentioned The Vampires of Venice, and I just went, yeah, why not?
We'll talk about it more. One of the good things about The Vampires of Venice, and that it actually leads in quite well from this on account of the fact that it's the next fucking episode for a start. But it gives a bit of a resolution to something that just kind of, it starts towards a resolution, which obviously makes more sense when you get to Amy's Choice, but we'll talk more about that. But it also gives you a nice little indicator of just how Stephen Moffat didn't know what the fuck the silence was.
Yes.
We'll get into that.
Marvellous.
Next time,
excellent. Well, if we reconvening on, looks at watch, aim for Wednesday until something
Wednesday. Until
something better comes along. Cool. Right, in that case, excellent stuff. In the meantime, that has been, what are we? Who are we? What do we do? Unsolid Popcorn's Directions Commentary Special with me, your host, me, watching Flesh and Stone. That was rather good. I do like that. I do like the angels. I know we've had that conversation before. In the meantime, any background noise is currently a dog on the sofa having a really lovely scratch of her back. So she enjoyed the episode as well. Thank you. Thank you. You do carry on. In the meantime, right, that's been this. That was it. That was all. Thank you. And we were joined, as ever, by the lovely Laura Monmouth.
Yeah, see you later.
And over there, John Carruthers.
Bye.
And there are rumours of a Morgan somewhere in the background.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. This is where I'm going to find out that we haven't been recording. Oh, we have been recording. That's a relief.
That's scarce.
Yeah, that's always good, isn't it? In the meantime, that's been us, and we shall see you again on Wednesday. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.